Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Yeah, the drums, they swing low, and the trumpets, they go, and they playing for you, girl, and the trumpets, they go, yeah, yeah, the trumpets, they go.
I can't believe he doesn't sing his name. Like, isn't Jason Derulo known for singing his name?
Jason Derulo.
Come on, Jason. That's Jason Derulo, trumpets, bringing us back here on the Mason Crosby Show. My name is Mitch Nellis, a.k.a. Thunder, in on the Mason Crosby Show. It's Wednesday, so it's hashtag Mason, no Mason, as Mason experiences Human Wednesday. He gets all the things done on his honey-do list, or all the things done on his whatever it is to-do list.
His inner excellence to-do list.
Yes, I'm sure he's reading chapters and chapters of Jim Murray's inner excellence, which Tommy did just order, so you'll get it by Friday, right?
Friday.
All right, so starting Monday, like, let's go. Like,
quote a day.
For yes, that. Quote a day, and I expect like within like a week or two to be a changed person.
I know Mason doesn't even know this idea, and he loves this idea.
No doubt about it. There's no doubt. Joining us now on the Mason Crosby Show with Mitch Thunder Nellis, Dave Schrader from WBAY in Green Bay. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You don't even know what you're jumping into with this interaction. I assume you've read Inner Excellence, right?
Oh, I have not, but maybe the Packers need to after last Sunday.
They might. We saw A.J. Brown reading it, and we saw both teams not perform to their inner excellence. I think we can pretty...
you could say.
Yeah, exactly. So welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being on. You were at the game in Philadelphia watching that kind of ugly display of football. I would say on both sides of the ball. What was your immediate takeaway from a Packers perspective as the final whistle blew?
The Packers perhaps really need Christian Watson. Remember when they had 30 points in 5 straight games? Do you remember that?
It's a distant memory, my friend.
Right. That was 2 days before Christmas. They beat the Saints 34-0. After that point, they barely led the rest of the year, and it coincides with, Christian going down. But there's obviously other reasons. But in Minnesota, they led 3-0. They led the Bears for 54 seconds before blowing that lead at the end, and they didn't lead in Philly. It's just astonishing how the team seemed to be hitting its stride and then didn't. But missing even in those 30-point outings was some consistency and some of the wow plays through the passing game that we were accustomed to down the stretch of last season.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I think this week, everybody's talking about Devontae Adams. Everybody's talking about T. Higgins. Everybody's talking about they need a number one. Do you believe they need a number one, or do you believe a healthy Christian Watson makes a difference across the board?
I think a number one would make a difference.
Okay.
You're talking about Christian Watson, though, a guy who had his most healthy season yet and until he didn't at the end of this year. I haven't seen it for like a whole year from him. Romeo Dobbs, you're really worried for that guy with the concussions he suffered. Jaden Reed, while the shoulder injury is not going to affect him next year, if he's going to be tasked with running over the middle and he's your clear number one threat, people are going to try to tee off on him. And the way he runs and fights through contact, self-preservation is not often something that guy's looking for. He's looking forward to making the big explosive splash play. I think they got really talented guys, but there's no doubt a number one receiver would surely help that offense and surely help Jordan Love with someone to lean on when they go against some man defenses or when they get up against one of these premier opponents where you know you can throw it up and your guy's going to make the play and make you right, you know?
Absolutely. You made the perfect segue, and Dave Schrader's joining us from WBAY here on the Mason Crosby Show with me, Mitch Thunder Nellis. Jordan Love had an amazing second half of the season last season. Gets the huge contract, and doesn't have a, I mean, he didn't have a bad year. He had a good year. Some people would say very good. I don't think many people would say great. What did you see from Jordan Love throughout this season, and what does he need to do to get to great?
Yesterday, Matt LaFleur held a really lengthy end-of-the-year press conference, like 40 minutes, and he was asked a lot about Jordan Love and many other topics. He said the thing he was most proud of with Love is his sack avoidance this year. I think it was 13 sacks he took in the regular season. He missed 2.5 games, but still 13 is a really low number. So avoiding pressure is great. But the fact that you're under pressure as much as he was isn't great, you know? He loved the praise to be. He finds a guy downfield and got us a million explosive play touchdowns when it mattered the most. But obviously, Jordan Love had some things going on. He had the knee going on after Brazil. He had the groin going on after Jacksonville. While the Packers really were solid in terms of who they started week in, week out on the offensive line, it looked at times the second half of the season like he was a little uncomfortable in the pocket. And did that affect his footwork? Did that affect his downfield accuracy? Because last year, it wasn't just stats. It was the eye test that really popped for Jordan Love. I remember his touchdown in a loss to Tampa at home on a dead sprint up and through the pocket to the right, put it where it had to be in the corner of the end zone for Jaden Reed. Do you guys remember that one?
Yes, last year, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and then in the playoffs, he had a dead sprint left, found Romeo for a toe tapper in San Fran.
Yep.
And he beat the blitz with big touchdowns to Reed in Minnesota week 17, then to Dontavian Wicks to really cement the blowout in Dallas in the playoffs. There were these wow moments where you're like, oh my goodness, how did this team get so lucky to get a third straight Hall of Fame caliber arm? This year, even some of the plays they completed, it's like, that wasn't the tightest spiral. That wasn't exactly where it needed to be. Matt LaFleur talking yesterday about the three picks in Philly and talking about the blame that there is to go around. Jordan Love, he threw the first pick, the ball slightly inside. But he says Dontavian Wicks has to stack Darius Slay, get him on his back, use his body to shield himself to make an easier catch. Second one, Malik Heath runs the route at 15 yards instead of 20 yards. And after I watched the film, if he makes the break at 20 yards, the throw's 5 yards further up to the right, and the linebacker has no play on it. So there's blame to go around, but no matter why, the end result was that the passing game was not as explosive, not as precise, and not as eye-popping.
Yeah, Dave, this is producer Tommy here. I wanted to get your take on
That's super producer Tommy.
Thank you, Mitch. Thank you. I wanted to know, we've been talking a lot about Jordan Love over the last few days, and you just mentioned there that you could see he was uncomfortable at the end of the season. How uncomfortable do you think Matt LaFleur looked the last 3 weeks of the year? You end on your season losing to three teams you've already lost to, you've already played this season, and pretty much got outcoached in all of them. What do you think went through Matt LaFleur's head at the end of the year, and is there reason to pump the brakes on excitement with him?
I really like Matt and his creative play calling and a lot of the things that they've done over the last six seasons. The results are what they are, though. Three postseason wins in 6 years, which is insane. I mean, the Chiefs have had three postseason wins or more in four different years during the Matt LaFleur era as they've reached the Super Bowl and won the Super Bowl. I'm talking a single postseason. It's very disappointing. There's no doubt about it. Do I think Matt's the coach for this team? Absolutely, I do. I think the trouble lies in talking about slow starts and wanting to do better and then seeing it manifest itself time and time again. So what's going on there? They say with coaching, you're either coaching things that are issues or you're allowing it to happen. I feel like he was harping on all the right things and the execution just was woefully off. You could talk about how they adapted in games maybe too late. In late comeback efforts, like, they figured things out in the second half when they were down too many scores for it to matter. So maybe you need to adapt earlier. Matt said yesterday that a lot of teams were bucking what was their conventional standard defense against similar offenses to the Packers, and they were doing different things when they played the Packers. So he wants to dive into why are they doing different things when they face us? Is it something that they're seeing that we do? Can we adjust that so that they're not going off template, I think is what he called it, of what they normally do? It's interesting. Like, Matt LaFleur deserves blame in the playoff loss. He's the head coach. That's where it goes. But when Keyshawn Nixon fumbles the opening kick, it's like, okay, how much of that is Matt LaFleur's fault?
Sure.
It's terrible. I mean, obviously, they focus on ball security. They focus on taking it away. Keyshawn's been itching for it to get colder and teams to kick to him and him have a chance, and then that happens. And I was sitting in the press box, I'm like, I know games aren't over 5 seconds in, but with that crowd,
I texted Tommy and Mason.
I was like, is it over? I mean, I hate to say it, but
I texted Tommy and Mason when that happened. I said, game's over. I literally texted them at 3:42 on Sunday.
Yeah, it's a swing that is very hard to overcome.
Yeah, it's just such a hard thing. And,
and when they made it close, you're like, dang, that defense is playing its butt off. I think three or four straight three and outs in the middle portion of the game, they just couldn't get the takeaway. But I don't believe any of the blame goes to the defense after the touchdown pass to start where they allowed 6.75 seconds in the pocket for Hurts. And I think that was just a sort of rush where they were super gap in a – they were super focused on not getting out of their gaps.
Right.
And I think they're like, no. Yeah, you have to also apply pressure. You can't just stand there and hem him in the pocket. After that point, I think the defense, besides the two personal fouls that led to the late field goals or helped with the late field goals, they played lights out for 55 minutes of the game. But with the offense doing nothing, you need more than that.
All right, so what now, Dave? You know, you look at Monday and the guys go through the locker room and Jair, like, has an attitude, and Keyshawn doesn't want to return kicks anymore, but he wants to be CB1. Rashawn Gary has some motivational words, and you know, guys for the most part are you know, positive, looking forward to next year. And then you see that LaFleur talks yesterday, Goody's talking tomorrow. So where does this team need to go to find the success that maybe we wanted this year, but maybe we need to be a little more patient and maybe we can expect or hope for next year?
And to add on to that, is there pressure on this team to do so? Is there pressure on Brian Gutekunst to make a move or Matt LaFleur to influence after another season like this?
There's always pressure. I mean, it's a Super Bowl or bust in this city every single year. It doesn't matter what your excuse is. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. Is next year any more pressure than this year? I don't really think so. But I think the clock's always ticking. You're Matt LaFleur. Your best buddy is Sean McVay. I mean, he got his Rams off the mat from 1-4 this year to go stomp the Vikings you couldn't beat. I mean, when you're trying to make a legacy in this league, you got to get that championship. And every year that you don't get it, there's more and more questions about whether you can do it. I think personnel-wise, what you got to do is you got to get some guys who can win in pass rush situations without designing up a creative blitz or a creative fake blitz. I mean, Rashawn Gary got paid. The dude doesn't have a single double-digit sack season. I mean, really. Max Crosby, same draft class, had one his rookie year. I think he's had two or three. Rashawn Gary is a very good player with very good motor, but they're paying him to be a great player. And we've seen a couple games where he's got like a hat trick of sacks in single games. But he's not a guy that's going to get you a sack every single week, and you need that.
Right.
You need to find that.
He lacks that consistency, right?
Right, and you just got to dominate whoever you go against. It's just part of it. I think Jair Alexander may have played his last down as a Packer. How can you count on a guy who you don't know if he's going to be healthy? And when he gets injured, you don't put him on IR because you think he'll be back, and he's not back. What's going on there? Like, are we misdiagnosing things, or is there – I don't know what's going on with that. It's just super weird to me because usually if a guy's going to miss 6-7 weeks, you put him on IR. Packers never did. They obviously thought he was coming back. And when he's out there, he makes a huge difference for you. But when he's not out there and you're counting on him to be out there and you're committing cap space to him, ooh, it's a problem. You need better corners. You need better pass rush. And yeah, a great receiver would help. The question is, with the cap space the Packers have, what are they going to do? Are they going to get T. Higgins? Are they going to get two or three little pieces? What's the plan? What does Goody think best? And can they hit on some of these draft picks as well? I think Goody's done a great job in the draft, a great job finding free agents like Josh Jacobs, Xavier McKinney. But you look at a lot of the guys that went in the first, Eric Stokes. I know he had the knee injury and the ankle injury as well, or the foot, either the leg injury, the multiple leg injuries that really robbed him perhaps of some of his speed. You look at some of the other guys they've invested in heavily. Devontae Wyatt has shown flashes. I think he's a good player. Quay Walker, I mean, the dude is in position a lot. I wish he would catch some of those interceptions that hit him in the hands. There's a lot of premier draft picks and capital, Lucas Van Ness, that's been spent on trying to find guys that can really take things to the next level. And they've showed flashes, but they haven't really lived up to that first-round billing. And I get it's hard when you're usually picking later in the first round. And I think that has gotten into the psyche of how the Packers draft. They draft for upside then. If you're not going to get a top-five talent, maybe you draft a guy who may have top-five talent, but it's raw. But they just need a sure thing at some of these premier positions that they can count on week in, week out.
Dave Schrader, WAY, joining us here on the Mason Crosby Show with Mitch Thunder Nellis. Dave, did you have any Philadelphia moments, experiences, like we saw in that video where the fiance was taking the video? The guy now has been banned from Philadelphia Eagles games, rightfully so. Did you have any Philly moments? Did you have to get physical with any Philly fans or anything?
My wife usually likes to travel to one or two road games a year, and she has said, "No, Mary, I'm just not going to go to Philly." And I'm like, "Well, you could go to Philly, just don't wear any Packer gear." they're notorious for that. Their fans are they're crazy, and not in a good way. But I will say, some of the best people on earth I know are from Philly. Like Stephen Watson used to be at WISN. Sure. Yep. He does Bucks pregame.
Yep,
Philly guy, one of the nicest human beings I've ever met. I worked with on the Packers beat for years. One of the nicest people I've ever met. But Philly certainly has some fans that are going to give you the business and be completely inappropriate. And in terms of banning fans, I know they're banning him, but what's to stop his buddy from buying his ticket? No one's going to look for his face entering the stadium. It's probably just tied to his name and his credit card.
It probably is, yeah. I don't think they're using facial recognition to keep him out of games.
Yep. I mean, the dude's a dirtbag, and there's plenty of them in the Philly stands, it appears, but I don't want to paint the entire city in that brush because I personally have never encountered that, and I have some good friends who are Philly people.
Sure, absolutely. Dave, I got to ask about does Doug Gottlieb just need a hug? Like, can we just give him like a collective hug and just like what's going on with Doug? And is that, did he need to break this program down to rebuild it, or what's going on over there?
Whatever's going on is not working. I'll leave it at that.
That's fair. Is there any sense that it's not working now, but it could be working in the future, or is there just like nobody really knows what's going on? From a fan's perspective.
When you lose your nation's leading scorer, it hurts.
Yep.
But I went to Valparaiso University, mid-major basketball. Yep.
Valpo's great.
It's a tough go. It's a tough go. Because the moment any player has success in today's landscape, they're gone. Money, right. Helper, gone. So it's really hard to build something. I don't know what the solution is for Green Bay, but this is a really, really rough go.
that's fair. That's fair.
I played Milwaukee to 11 points, though.
I mean, that's
it's not a win, but no. It's like, wow, it wasn't that bad.
Right, you didn't get blown out of the gym. I mean, the wins are now not getting blown out of the gym, huh? Yeah, that's a little rough. How's your drum game, by the way?
You know, I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, so I play less than I'd like to, but I do like playing the drums.
Are you going to encourage them to get involved and
they bang on my drums in the basement all the time.
I believe it. Well, Dave, thank you so much for taking some time today, and we will definitely catch up with any Green Bay news. I'm sure during the offseason we'll have an excuse to give you a call and find out what's going on, and especially as we get, you know, we're 3 months away from the NFL draft, so your life's about to get crazy again.
Yes, it is. Have a good one. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. That's Dave Schrader, WBAY reporter up in Green Bay. Cover of the Green Bay Packers, was at the Packers Eagles game on Sunday. And, you know, it's a handful dealing with a 2- and a 4-year-old at home. Thankfully, I'm a little bit past that. I'm about 10 years advanced from there, but I remember those days of trying to keep everybody entertained and trying to keep everybody fed and clothed and not making too big of a mess and all those good things. So again, thank you to Dave Schrader for jumping on and giving us a little perspective about Jordan Love, Matt LaFleur, Goody, and especially the defense. Like, I love what Dave said, that like the defense dominated for 55 minutes. And if you had told me at the beginning of the season that the Packers defense was going to dominate in a playoff game for 55 minutes, I would have felt really good. And part of me, here on January 15th, actually still feels really good. Like, part of me feels really good that that defense can play to that level. I know guys come, guys go, personnel changes, draft picks, free agents, whatever it might look like. But the fact that a Packers defense can play at that level after years and years of Joe Barry, like, putting up, like the Pac-Man ghosts on defense, and after eating the magic bullet and having them, like, just eaten up by their by the offense, it's kind of like I want to take that positivity with me into the offseason and fix the offense.
So do you think that, okay, that answers my question, I guess. You think they could run it back with the same defense?
Similar defense. I wouldn't take the exact, I mean, it's not going to be exactly the same, but I don't, like, listen, if they get Max Crosby, I'm not going to say no.
Well, right. That's significantly getting the defense better. I'm saying if the defense were to come back with
at
the
a
exact
similar
same
skill level,
the exact same talent level, can they run it back with this defense?
I think they can, based on where they ranked yardage-wise, points-wise. You know, I know we have a lot of questions. We talked about it yesterday about Lucas Van Ness and, like, just being, like, a great athlete, but he can't really play. Can you count on Rashawn Gary? I don't think Kenny Clark could be worse. So I think Kenny Clark will rebound next year. I think, you know, Edrin Cooper, getting a whole season out of him, getting Quay Walker better. I mean, Quay Walker was better this year than he was at the beginning of the year, and then he was certainly last year.
It's a good topic for tomorrow or something this week with Mason. Let's do that.
He doesn't know ball. What are you talking about? Especially defense.
Can they run it back with the same defense?
All right, that's a great – will you write that down?
I wrote it down.
All right, you write it down. So, again, our thanks to Dave Schrader, WBAY, jumping on the show. We're going to switch gears a little bit coming up. Eye on basketball. Milwaukee Bucks win. Marquette Golden Eagles win. In overtime, a little dicey. Wisconsin Badgers win, up by 17 and 1-2, a little dicey. But we've got three check marks, three wins. Let's talk a little hoops coming up when we come back here on the Mason Crosby Show.